Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Okay, I think this show is obvious at this point. After 64 shows, this is more or less a public service show, in that as I evolve these subjects for you, I realize you can't get this off internet. And that's what you like to do. I understand that. Because a lot of the information I give you is based on clinical experience. And anybody that's mastered something will tell you it's really not the books, it's the experience. What I do in these shows is compile a lot of day-to-day with patients over the last 20, 25 years, constantly trying to get answers amidst sometimes really overwhelming odds. And that's how I put these shows together. On top of which, I will not sell. My shows are not about sale. And one of the reasons I do that is because I think we've got the sales covered. I think we've got great product. I think you know where to get that great product. I think that it's application of herbal medicine and application of therapy that's really what it's about. That's why I started my school, the Medici Institute for Advanced Nutritional Education. I'm continuing with my second class tomorrow. I have about 5 seats left. What I want you to do is call the center at 310-320-1132 and ask to speak to either Annika or Catalina. That's either Annika or Catalina, and just sign up. And they'll take you from there. You can also get on my website at straighttalk.cc. And I start the show like this today because the more I do this show, the more I get connected to education. I'm having an absolute party with these classes that I've been running since November. And it's amazing to me how really what I thought would happen is actually happening. I'm watching the public, and that's you, integrate higher levels. I'm moving you away from this very, very simplistic, I have this symptom, what herb should I take stuff, to a higher level. And guess what? You're still going to need herbs, but you're going to understand how to use those herbs. And you're going to understand in a deeper way how if you don't make the lifestyle changes and master the art of doing that, the herbs don't work as well as you want. So really, we're going to hit a topic today, and I'm going to barrel away with some hard science because you listen to this show and you know sometimes we've got to get a little bit more technical rather than philosophical or sensational. And again, the theme is education. You have to be educated to understand what? Why you have to reduce the number of pharmaceutical drugs you ingest. After the age of 60, it's almost legion at this point in American, if not world society, to be on 1 or 2 or 3. You're up to 10 pharmaceutical drugs at a time. And really, once you're on that bandwagon, the end is near because the side effects are horrible, but you don't really get what side effect means. What you do is in the general sense, you understand drugs are no good, and we understand that. Mind you, sometimes they're necessary, but very often they're overused, and you understand drugs are no good. Great. That's where you start. But really, where you have to take it is to why. If you understand why, that's what catalyzes action. So the general, nonsensical literature that you can read on the side of a bottle, or when you listen to holistic wisdom from the guy at the vitamin store that drugs are bad, this isn't what we're talking about. We're talking about understanding something more deeply. So put on your seatbelts, guys, because here we go. First of all, negotiating with your doctor as to how to get off drugs. This is something that really for a lot of people, they have an aneurysm over this issue. I've got to tell my doctor in the white suit that I don't want to take the drug, or I don't want to take the drug anymore, and I'm scared. You have no idea how many times I hear this, and so I have to start with this one. This isn't the science part of the show, but I have to start with this. What you do with your medical doctor is you tell him that you don't want to take the drug, or you tell him that you want to reduce the drug. Now, I didn't say ask him. And the reason you can't ask him, and this is the point, and this is why I'm starting the show with this topic. The reason you can't ask him is because he's not allowed to tell you to get off the drug. If the standard of care is to go on the drug at this dose, and the doctor, since he's been 15 years old, in his AP biology classes, has been told to follow the club's methodologies. By the time that doctor's 50 years old and you're asking him whether you can get off the drug or not, is it okay, doctor, that I stop my Coumadin or I go off my lisinopril? That doctor is risking his career by saying yes. You're asking him to create the greatest sin he can possibly create, and that's to go against the club. And yes, if he were to say that, God forbid something should happen to you, it's on his conscience. So not just from the litigious standpoint, but from the standpoint of the brotherhood, from the standpoint of morals, a doctor doesn't want to tell you to go against the grain. Now, here's the pearl for you. When you tell a doctor you're going off a drug, a doctor is bound by the Hippocratic Oath to tell you, Mrs. Smith, if you go off that drug, you're crazy. You will get sick. You will injure yourself. You are risking your life to go off that drug. I would not go off that drug if I were you. That doctor is morally culpable to respond to your imperative in that way. And when you tell him what you're going to do, you're giving him a wonderful opportunity to do one of two things. Get morally indignant and tell you, you must stay on that blood pressure drug. You could be risking your life with a stroke. You give him an opportunity to do that, or you give him an opportunity to back off. He doesn't have to say anything. He can simply say, well, if it's your choice in the end. It is your choice in the end. But when you have a good relationship with your medical doctor, and number one, make sure you have a good relationship. If you have a medical doctor that's a clone, get a different one. And don't tell me you're just locked into your health care provider and you have no choices. Choices are out there. And there are more than one doctor in the group. So always make friends and always be pleasant and be a good patient. But know how to deliver the bomb. And the bomb is, once you have a decent relationship with a medical doctor, when you want to tell them, Doc, I'm going off the glucophage. Doctor, I'm going off the high blood pressure meds. They have a choice. Again, they can either get behind the stick and tell you the severe and serious risks you're taking and that they wouldn't do that. Now, the reality of it, and this is why we had to set you up for the reality of it, the reality of it is that if, in fact, you're doing something stupid, that doctor is going to respond with that tenacity, with that tenacity. In that tone of voice, they're going to tell you, no, don't do that. But if you're going off something like Lipitor, which is killing you anyway, and which the FDA knows is going to be moving sort of their perspective of it away from this cholesterol thing, if you tell your doctor something like, I'm going off Lipitor, and you have a good relationship, you know what they're going to do? Well, it's your choice. That's your flag. That's your cue. That's the signal that you don't really need the drug. You see? So what you're teaching, what you're learning here is to read and talk between the lines. You have to remember, when you're being counseled by your medical doctor, unfortunately, now, today, he is part of a very sick system that he doesn't enjoy either. And many doctors, I can tell you, who I'm friends with, are throwing up their arms in their 50s and 60s and really asking themselves why they bothered in the first place. You've got those guys, you've got the clones, These are the people who don't even think about what they're doing as medical doctors. And these are the people that many of you complain about to me. And then sometimes, not often enough, we have the kings of medicine. They're still out there. You have to look for them. But you have to create the right environment. So first issue, negotiate and how to negotiate off pharmaceutical meds. Because you know what? Lots of you need to get off them under supervision. Under supervision. The way to bring it to your doctor is by saying, hey, doc, you know what? I don't really feel that much better on this drug. I want to wean off it. So I'm going to cut it by 15% just to let you know. That's how you do it. The other way you do it is if you can monitor through a reading what you're given the drug regarding. For instance, if it's your blood sugar, you can monitor your blood sugar. If it's your blood pressure, you can monitor your blood pressure. Pain is subjective, so we can't really monitor it, but you know how much pain you're in. Antidepressants, anti-anxieties, again, it's subjective. Something you should never go cold turkey on. But if you were to tell your doctor, I'm going off the antidepressant gradually, please help me do it gradually. This is how you enlist support. So number one, you have to know how to negotiate. The next thing you have to do is find out how the drug is excreted. Listen, drugs are miracles for lots of people. Pharmaceutical medicine, yes, it pushed out natural medicine. Back in the 20s and 30s, I don't know, half, three-quarters of the med school curriculum was natural medicine. Remember, we're talking 1910, 1920. We didn't do a lot of surgery. Surgery was very crude, and we didn't have a lot of pharmaceuticals. So what was it to be a medical doctor? It was to learn the anatomy, the physiology, the very hard sciences, and then practice healing through nature. The holistic doctor of today, the enemy of today, was really the doctor of yesterday. By the 1930s, the 1940s, the drug companies took control of the FDA, and they also took control of the AMA through funding. Well, just like any corporate business would seek to expand. And I'm not necessarily going to criticize that. I'm going to point out that they took over. They yielded tremendous influence, that is. The pharmaceutical companies yielded tremendous influence because what they did worked. I would not have argued antibiotics. By the 1940s, Fleming discovered them in the late 20s. By the 40s, we were mass producing them. Honestly, I would not argue antibiotics, nor would I argue many drugs against many drugs in acute life-threatening situations. In 1890, when Grandpa was 95 years old and had pneumonia and wanted to kick a few more years, it's a shame we didn't have an antibiotic to knock out that pneumonia. And that's my point. There's a place for them. However, what's happened over the years, unfortunately, is they've turned into the point where they're used chronically. It's not the acute use of the drug. It's the chronic use of the drug. So if you're on drugs and you're using them chronically, that you've been on them a year or 2 years, your doctor said you're going to do this forever, or somehow you started and you just don't question it anymore. Number two, you have to find out how the drug is excreted. You have to find out how the drug is excreted. And that drug will be excreted through the liver or through the kidneys. And we're going to get to an understanding then of how the drug can derange, destroy, distort, dismember the liver and or the kidneys. So some drugs, if they're fat soluble, they go out more through the liver. If they're water soluble, they go out more through the kidney. That's important for you to know. Often they go out both ways. That's important for you to know. If they go out both ways and you don't have a gallbladder. So here's an example, all right? Let's get the thinking caps on and have fun here. Let's say you don't have a gallbladder and you're on a drug that goes out through the liver and the gallbladder. Well, it's not going out through your liver and your gallbladder. I can guarantee you that because you don't have a gallbladder, and that means the bile ducts up in your liver are severely fibrosed, meaning they're clogged, meaning they're not working. meaning you're leaking bile rather than dropping a quart or two a day into your intestines. Well, if that drug is toxic and it's made to go out the liver, but it can go out the kidney, what's it going to do? You got it. It's going to burn out your kidneys. Now, I'm going to make burn out very technical, hopefully in about 10 or 15 minutes, but it's going to hit the kidney really, really hard. And over 5 years or 10 years, all of a sudden you're in some stage of renal failure. Or no, I'm sorry, you're not in renal failure. You just don't feel good. Your kidneys are always inflamed. The podocyte has lost its foot. And collectively, your kidney, even though it's not diseased, is not functioning correctly. But the problem is subclinical. Maybe you only dropped your GFR, your filtration rate, by 10%, meaning your kidney's only 10% down. So we can't call it a disease. So your face isn't blown up, your feet aren't swollen, but your knees are always aching. Because as we know, the kidney reflexes to the knee. Now, did you hear that line of thought? That's reality. Fascinating. You take a drug that your doctor tells you you need. It's toxic to the liver, but it can also be excreted through the kidney. But it's easier if it goes out through the liver, except with you, you don't have a gallbladder, which means your bile ducts are fibrosed, so we shift it over to the kidney, and over 5 years of an overused drug that could have been prevented if you changed lifestyle, but you were not encouraged to do so, you end up doing what? Inflaming the kidney. That has a very technical meaning, and I don't need to repeat it with the podocyte. But what happens then? You have knee pain. So you have knee pain now because you're reflexing off an inflamed kidney. Very common scenario, guys. And so what? So you lose your edge on the track. So now you have to walk on the track, or you have to speed walk on the track, which is even worse. And your knee gets worse because now you're walking around like a duck on the track, speed walking, rather than doing that nice, graceful, slow jog that you could once sustain. And now you're tearing up your knee. And we add insult to injury, and things sequence. This is the thing about drugs. Drugs start chain reactions. And if we add the number of drugs, they all add chain reactions at an exponential pace. We're going to try to get into what I call the heart loop or the heart blood pressure loop so you can really see how this works. So you've got to know how the drug is excreted. And I'll tell you what to do with that knowledge. The other thing you got to keep in mind is your pH takes a dive. I mean, it's kind of laughable. People come in, doc, my pH, I can't get my pH balanced. I took all this green stuff and my pH isn't balanced. I took all this white powder and my pH isn't balanced. And they're on four or five pharmaceutical drugs. We all take note that Coca-Cola is acidifying. A donut and coffee and sugar is acidifying. Guys, 100 times that are drugs. And if you're on a drug and you can't get your pH balanced, please look at the drug first and foremost. Now, pH means oxygen. Oxygen is how the entire train is driven. So when we have less oxygen available to the cell, there are thousands of repercussions. But the way you have to look at that, and again, this is another central concept in medicine, all right? So you can't get this off the internet. Central concept in medicine. When we say the pH takes a dive and you go acidic, and that means less oxygen, you have to understand that that's tomorrow's stroke, that's tomorrow's cancer, that's tomorrow's heart attack, that's tomorrow's back pain, that's tomorrow's cesarean, that's tomorrow's arthritic condition. You have to understand that while you're looking for this straight cause-effect thing, you know, I've got the symptom, what nutraceutical do I take? Or I've got this illness, exactly why do I have it? You've got to understand that illness is the expression of multiple fundamentals, multiple basics going askew, all potentiating with negative reciprocity. Big words for when things go boom bust, it's because lots of bad agents are having a party. You see? So when we talk about acidity due to drugs, the pH is taking a dive. Well, the pH taking a dive means no oxygen in the cell. That has millions of repercussions in the cell. Hundreds, thousands, I could say millions. And what it's going to do is force you to dip into your reserves. So drugs burn out your reserves. Wow. What reserves? Estrogen, progesterone, DHA, pregnenolone, testosterone, adrenaline, cortisol, aldosterone, thyroxine, everything you call a gland, everything you call a hormone, everything you call a longevity chemical in the body, our own resveratrol, all the good things that our probiotics, our symbiotes make, goes into panic because of high acidity or whatever else it has to do to compensate for that drug you're on that you might not need to be on. So first of all, you got to understand drugs don't cure. They mitigate symptoms, and the decision is cost-benefit. I was with a very nice woman a few weeks ago. She had anywhere from 2 to 7 months to live. She was on 5 very serious drugs. And the doctor said, you have 2 months if you don't take the drugs and 7 to 8 months if you do take the drugs. Tragic situation. God bless her. That's cost benefit. Who are we as holistic practitioners to say to that woman, don't take those drugs, get off those tomorrow? We have things that can help your body heal itself and forget those. That would be insanity. That would be immoral. So drugs are cost benefit, but you have to know the cost so you can assess the benefit. Next issue with drugs, they interrupt the feedback loop. Feedback loop, big word. Big word. For how you must understand a biological system. I'm going to introduce a word, reciprocity. One hand washes the other, or one hand dirties the other. Reciprocity, important concept for you to understand within the human biological mechanism. That means if you take an antidepressant, and that antidepressant or anti-anxiety drug goes into the synapse, the space between your nerve fibers up in your brain, and does its dance in that space. By definition, it's turning off either receptor sites or some process that your body is naturally trying to facilitate. So if you've got two spaces, a space between two neurons in the brain, between an axon and a dendrite in the brain, and you've got a space there called a synapse, and that anti-anxiety med or that antidepressant works in that space, before you take it, don't you know your body's working hard to calm you down? Or to make you more euphoric from your depressed state. Your body's up to something. Now, you may be interfering with it. You may have an emotional process that interferes with your body's natural counterbalance tendencies. The body is always, before you take a drug, making chemicals. I mean chemicals. Chemicals we could analyze in a spectroscopy machine. Chemicals we could take to a lab and chart out their molecular configuration with. Your body's always making chemicals in response to imbalance. When you take a drug, in this case, say an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety, and you plug up the synapse with your pharmaceutical choice, you turn off the process. The synthetic process tells the body's natural mechanism to shut off or slow down. Now, we could make this common sense. Common sense is spare the rod, spoil the child sort of routine. In other words, if somebody's developing a bad habit, and instead of addressing the habit, you feed them sugar, you suppress the habit or the symptom, they get addicted to the suppressant. They get addicted to that which masks the aberrant behavior. You never get to the cause simply because you fill up the kid with sugar or you give it a rationale to continue to exist. And this is what happens when we start to take drugs. We turn off the natural mechanism. The body starts to depend upon the synthetic. And you can't get off the drug. So now we have this issue about how to get off a drug, because now the body's systems are so dependent on the drug. And this is why you have to do it gradually. Because drugs interfere, and this was the point, with the feedback loops. The body lives in reciprocity. No matter what it's doing wrong, it's always talking to another part of itself that's trying to right the wrong. The body will always try to bring itself to equilibrium, to status quo. The body will always try to buffer a bad problem. And that's what we mean by reciprocity. You can't do anything to the body without the body doing something to what was done, so to speak. There's a symphony going on in there where everything is interconnected to everything. This is why when you drop a synthetic in, you don't have any idea of the chain reaction. So we say you interrupt the feedback loop and you initiate a chain reaction, not in the correct direction. So you can't withdraw. You can't go cold turkey. You have to reduce under supervision. If you're on Zoloft or you're on Prozac, you've got to decide at some point with your medical doctor to come down by 10% or 15%. You have to bring yourself, if you're doing a holistic sort of a program where you're trying to strengthen and balance your body, you have to wait until something in you tells you you're better, and then you start to challenge the drugs in a sequential way under medical supervision. I see people do this all the time successfully. I see people go from 10 pharmaceuticals to one pharmaceutical in a year. It may take a year. It may take 2 years. It needs to be done intelligently. And guess what? I usually have the complete cooperation of their medical doctors because we understand how to negotiate it. And you would be amazed at how many medical doctors, when it's done, are happy to say, I'm so glad, Mrs. Smith, that that's happened to you, because, yes, those drugs have side effects. Doctors are allowed to admit under their standard of care that drugs have side effects, and those side effects are undesirable. We're going to discuss that in a minute. But at the same time, you can't tell your doctor, okay, is it okay if I go off the blood pressure med? You can't do that. They're not equipped to give you the answer. All right, let's get on the drugs themselves. Top drugs that you should be thinking about. The statins. The statin drugs. Lipitor. Zocor. The statins, the simvastatins. The whole slew of these things. Anything that your doctor gives you to lower your cholesterol. First argument. Get him to Dwight Lundell's book. Listen to show number 45. On my website, that's straighttalk.cc, not .com.cc. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you're just strumming through the radio, welcome to the show. Straighttalk.cc. Get to my archive. Get up the show on cholesterol. The cardiologist, the cardiac surgeon, Dr. Dwight Lundell, retired. He's out there somewhere in Arizona having a good time with his grandkids probably right now. And he's telling you we should not be so concerned with cholesterol. It's not cholesterol. It's inflammation. It's streaking, which is scarring on the inside of the coronary artery or otherwise. That's part of an inflammatory process that's fed by macrophage destruction and cytokines and all sorts of stuff I talked about on show number 45. Get Dwight's book on the cholesterol myth. And understand that you shouldn't be that concerned about your cholesterol. Now, yeah, if it's up at 600 and you've got some genetic marker for insanely high levels of it, that's one thing. But when your cholesterol's 220 or 250 or 280 and you're being told that you're going to plaque up and have heart disease when they don't have any other markers, like your triglycerides are normal, like your homocysteine is normal, like your CRP, your C-reactive protein is normal, like you may not even have that in the family, like you're not even overweight, and you're on Zocor, that's ridiculous. Read the book. Ask your cardiologist to read the book. And when he says none of this has been unanimously agreed upon, just pull out your other book on cigarettes and how they don't cause cancer circa 1960. I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Every time you talk to a medical doctor that tells you there's nothing to substantiate the claim that cholesterol is not really the driver of heart disease and therefore you should take the Zocor or the Lipitor. In the face of good evidence, like Lindell's book, when you're being told that, remind your physician that we had a similar argument back then around circa 1960 when medical doctors, and some of you remember this, advertised for the benefits of smoking Lucky and Camel and the rest of it. They did it. They advertised on billboards doing it, and so it was okay for you to do it, and you should believe that because they were your medical doctors. So just keep taking your statin drugs then, right? Because cholesterol drives heart disease, studies show. And the other studies that suggest otherwise, those studies you shouldn't listen to. Bring it politely to your medical doctor. Ask him to read it. Ask him to look at the hundreds of periodicals of peer-reviewed articles that support the statements that I just made. On top of which, guys, if you're that stubborn and you're going to stay on your statin drug, you must take CoQ10. Now, cholesterol is produced by the liver. Cholesterol makes up huge percentages of every single cell. Cholesterol is the base through which we make our hormones, which are steroids. Cholesterol, good. Not cholesterol, bad. Cholesterol, not the enemy. There's exogenous cholesterol, cholesterol that we ingest from the outside. When you sit down to a surf and turf, you're getting a lot of cholesterol from the lobster, and you're getting a lot of cholesterol from the meat. So your outside source of cholesterol adds to your inside production of cholesterol. And if your other systems in the body, and I won't get into the cholesterol story today, but if the other systems of your body are out of balance, your cholesterol will go up. That's going to mean you're going to have heart disease is nonsense. But when you take a drug that goes to the liver, that infects the production, or prevents it from being absorbed in the intestine. Associated to it is a marked decrease in the production of CoQ10. And CoQ10 is vital to what organ? I ask you, more than any other organ in the body. And of course, you guessed it, the number one organ in the body that has special reserves for CoQ10 is the heart. And that's the irony of it all. For the very heart disease that Lipitor is supposed to prevent, pulling the CoQ10 productions down is exactly how you get heart disease. So this really needs to be at the top of the list. And the pharmaceutical companies know this because they're starting to make strong arguments and funding research to show that the statin drugs are not just about cholesterol. They're also about preventing heart attacks and helping your bodies in other ways. And they know they have to find other reasons for this best-selling drug, because the thing about take it because the cholesterol's high, cholesterol's going to die a hard death. By itself, unaided by high triglycerides, C-reactive protein, homocysteine, and other cardiac markers, cholesterol is going to lose its influence. And you're starting to see pharmaceutical companies recognize this and shift the publications to the other great things that these statin drugs do. What you'll see all the time out in the community is people on CoQ10 with severe muscle atrophy, and their joints ache, and their muscles just ache out of nowhere. And the reason is no CoQ10. If you're on any of these statin drugs, get on CoQ10. 400, 800 milligrams of a good source, and I think you guys know where to get good sources. Enough on statin drugs. We could go on for days. Steroids. Steroids for what? Anti-inflammatory drugs. Steroids being none. Then there's the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, but let's just talk about steroids, because what are they used for? They're used for everything. Asthma, lung disease, lupus, colitis, Crohn's, IBS, back pain. Lots of athletes live on it. Steroids. A steroid is a glucocorticoid. Steroid is synthetic cortisol. You make that stuff. You may not make enough of it because your adrenals may be burned out. But your own body makes its anti-inflammatories. But when they're not enough, or they won't do the job, or you've got some acute situation, maybe a steroid is great. I'm all for steroids in the acute scenario. But the chronic, as any medical doctor will tell you, the chronic use of the steroid is a disaster. Number one, and more than anything, the steroid will spike your blood sugar. It's going to spike your blood sugar. Cortisol blocks insulin. Three big words. Cortisone blocks insulin. So again, the sugar in the blood, to get it to the cell, you got to have insulin from the pancreas to hit the beta receptor of the cell. And yet, if the steroid is high, the insulin doesn't work. Maybe it doesn't bind to the beta receptor. Something interrupts the normal insulin pathway, which means what? Your brain sees it all and says, let's make more insulin. In the meantime, while the insulin is failing you, your blood sugar is going up. So you've got high insulin, you've got high blood sugar, you're burning out your pancreas, and it's all because you're on synthetic steroids. You can't mess with nature sometimes. Now, cost benefit in an acute situation, two outs, bases loaded, the count is 3-2, and a pinch hitter comes in, and he's the famous home run hitter, but he's got a really bad ankle and he can't even walk, so they inject him with a steroid so he can get up there, hits the grand slam, Yankees or the Dodgers win the World Series, and everybody's happy we invented steroids. Well, so am I, and so are you. That's the acute use of it. The chronic use of it is the guy with asthma that really isn't being told that his asthma is just an occupational hazard because he cleans heating and air conditioning pipes all day long, and he's growing gross amounts of mold and other funguses in his lungs. And for 30 years, he's been suppressing asthma that didn't start until he was 40 years old as an occupational hazard, but nobody ever told him. They just gave him a steroid and said, go with it. Now he's 60, 65 years old, and he's had 20, 25 years of nonstop steroids. I see these cases all the time. That's bad. You lose bone. High cortisol causes you to replete bone. You drop bone. You dissolve bone. When I say bone, you think of mineral reservoir. Ever more from this show on, if I ever, Dr. Vincent Medici, say bone, you think of reserve minerals. Bone is an infinitely malleable substance that has the phenomenal capacity to dissolve itself instantaneously to buffer your body's chemistry. The bone is a bank. It's not bone, it's the bone bank. It's the Bank of America Bone Reserve. It's the Wells Fargo Bank of Bone Reserve. It means anytime the blood is screaming for nutrient, because the organ is screaming for nutrient, the bone dissolves. Now, when the cortisol goes up, the body dissolves a lot more bone. So here's a great one. You're on chronic steroids as an anti-inflammatory because of joint ache, and you're 70 years old. And they keep telling you your osteoporosis is getting worse. And somewhere in the muffle of the huffle of the duffle, nobody's reminded you that you needed to get off the steroid. And since you're in pain, if you don't take it because you don't know any other way out, you stay on it, and then your bone breaks. So grandma or grandpa breaks their hip when they fell down the stairs. And now we're in there, and we're doing what? We have pneumonia. Now, why do we have pneumonia? Because we're in a hospital bed. Well, one thing that the steroid also does is it does what? It depresses your immune system. Cortisol depresses the immune system. It makes your macrophages, your neutrophils, your eosinophils, your basophils, all your different, your lymphocytes, your killer T cells, it makes them stupid. And so on that cortisone, you become immunodepressed on top of osteoporotic. There's two side effects, but now you see how they're working tandem to each other. And one is working against the other. Happens all the time. There isn't a drug that we would get into that isn't going to work this way. So I want to deepen your understanding of don't take drugs, they're bad. More drugs are more worse. Let's get that to another level, because I know what you face. I know what you face at the hospital. I know what you face when you stand before the doctor. You can't say, drugs, bad. You say, doctor, I'm osteoporotic, okay, and I'm 65 years old, and this is going to depress my immune system to the point where I may get something else, on top of which you'll get lots more skin infections. Skin sags, ladies. Skin sags on long-term use of a cortisone cream or cortisol. And when you're asking your doctor for an alternative, if you're not bringing to him something more solid than drugs or bad, my friend told me, you're going to feel stupid. You got to understand, it's like my show last week. Ladies, you're taught to feel stupid in a medical doctor's office. It's how the agency works against you, and you've got to have the data. So use this show for data. Okay, let's get on Coumadin. Let's get on the heart loop. Boy, I had so much more to do today. I don't know how we're going to do this. I wanted to get into some of the fascinating changes inside the liver cell, inside the hepatocyte, and inside the renal cell. The little changes that occur on and as you use the drugs that aren't diseases, but they signal what's going to be a disease as over the years the side effect of the drug creates a seemingly irrelevant disease. And I wanted to get into that. Okay, I'm going to try the heart loop. I got to hit Coumadin. I wanted to get Protonix. Let me just say this quickly. Pepcid, Prilosec, Protonix, the hydrochloric acid blockers, don't take them. I know you've heard this before, so I don't have to stress it. But if you're on any of these antacids, what's going to happen is that that hydrochloric acid is going to be neutralized. And yes, you may enjoy a better symptomatic response, but low HCL will fail then to disinfect the gastrointestinal tract. You will grow a monster if your HCL is low. So whatever pathogen is hanging out in your small or large intestine, that your good probiotics and the pHs, the acidic pH, the acid pH of the large intestine. Yes, we said that correctly. Your large intestine is acidic, just like the vaginal canal should be acidic. The acidity of the large intestine, if the HCL is low, will shift to a more base or more alkaline pH, and all the bugs that don't grow because of the acid large intestine will now start growing. So you want to grow monsters, you want to grow Jurassic Park in your large intestine, just stay on that Protonix or that Pepcid or whatever latest calcium blocker or HCL blocker they're making for the stomach. That's one you have to get off. You have to digest your food with better food choices. Enough said on the Protonix, Pepcid, Prilosec issue. Let's get to the heart loop. Now, Coumadin, the blood thinner. If strokes are the third or fourth leading cause of death each year, then how well do you think Coumadin really works? The concept is for everybody, whether they've got low-grade congestive heart failure, whether they've had heart attacks, whether they've had a stroke, is that they ought to be on Coumadin. And the studies often don't support what common sense would dictate, which is that if you thin the blood, it's less likely to clot. If you antagonize the vitamin K clotting mechanism, if you compete inhibitively with the receptors in the liver for vitamin K, which sequence then into the clotting pathway so you don't make a clot. So Coumadin blocks vitamin K in Brooklynese. In straight English, vitamin K from vegetables helps us clot. Our large intestine makes it. We get it from fruits. We get it from leafy green vegetables. And that vitamin K goes into a pathway, binds to receptor sites in the liver, begins the metabolism of lots of clotting factors, and Coumadin blocks vitamin K. Now, that being said, if that process whereby we thin the blood and prevent a clot is so effective, then why are strokes the third leading cause of death? And you know what? If you study the stats on strokes, people don't die from the first stroke. They die from the second and third stroke. Yes, there are some deaths from the first stroke, but lots of stroke, lots of death from stroke is the second or the third or the fourth stroke. And all these people are on Coumadin. So if the drug was that effective, if it was really that simple, that if you have enough Coumadin in, you thin the blood and then you can't possibly clot anymore. If that was really the mechanism, then why, despite the fact that all these stroke victims, these stroke deaths are people who are on Coumadin, why is that still occurring? You got to think about that one. Because we're dosing Coumadin left and right and we're leaving it to the wolves then. We're simply concluding that on the basis of Coumadin, you don't have to be concerned anymore. You do have to be concerned. Look at the statistics. But let's understand some of the sort of like medical approach here between blood pressure meds, blood thinners like Coumadin, blood pressure meds, whether they're ACE inhibitors or whether they're beta blockers, diuretics like hydrochlorothiazide, and all of this put together as it relates to dealing with heart attacks, low-grade to moderate to severe congestive heart failure, to anybody with an incidence or concern about having strokes. Here's one perspective, and the perspective is that you're going to need a blood pressure med because if your vessels constrict a little more easily, so they'll give you a beta blocker like Atenolol, okay, Tenormin's the generic, in response to the fact that if they can prevent constriction via an ACE inhibitor, like lisinopril, which blocks a chemical made in the kidney called angiotensin. So whether you're on a ACE inhibitor like lisinopril, which blocks a chemical in the kidney called angiotensin, which constricts, or whether you're on a beta blocker like Atenolol, which blocks constriction also, whether you're on a beta blocker or an ACE inhibitor, the concept is if we prevent constriction of the artery, it will be easier on the heart. Now, where are the studies? Ask your doctor for the studies to show that anybody with 160 over 90 heart blood pressure, or 150 over 90, or 140 over 80, or an intermittent spike because you're nervous in a doctor's office, of 160 over 80 or 160 over 90 necessitates the use of an ACE inhibitor or a beta blocker, and that the studies show that if you do that years earlier, you'll definitely reduce the incidence of heart disease. Ask them to show you a study before they give you the drug. It is supposition, and it is rarely backed in any credible way to give your daily physical exam at the doctor's office or in the hospital to a person that's nervy simply because it's just nervy to get on the freeway and wait in a doctor's office, any type of blood pressure med, on the supposition that they're going to reduce their incidence of cardiovascular disease just because of that one day in the doctor's office. And this is done all the time. So it's 5 years later, and what have you done? You've interrupted the feedback loop. If your arterial system is in vasoconstriction and your blood pressure's up, don't you think the body's got safeguards to vasodilate? Don't you think the hypothalamus is injecting signals into the autonomic nervous system to try to prime you into a state of relaxation so you don't need the drug? But if you stay on the drug, you know what you do? If you stay on the blood pressure med and you keep yourself artificially vasodilated, what you do is you do what they said. You decrease the stress on the heart. So the heart doesn't have to pump as hard, which does what then? It creates stasis of blood. It can create stasis of blood in the heart. You start to develop low-grade perfusion problems. You thicken blood. And if you thicken blood and you have, say, now we'll integrate this into another model, and you have some sort of broken ankle, or you have a chronically sprained neck, or you had some bad head trauma in a car accident, and you have stasis of blood secondary to a lowered perfusion, secondary to blood pressure meds given to you because one day in the doctor's office you were nervous and your blood pressure was elevated, you are risking a heck of a consequence on some weak supposition that you needed the blood pressure med in the first place, because stasis of blood is what drives a clot. So look at that. We're giving you something to prevent a cardiovascular incident and then indirectly creating a scenario that if you just use your brains and you piece it together can produce the same scenario they're trying to prevent. I should do two shows on this. Truly two shows. We could do six shows on this. You can create scenarios where drugs are interacting with other drugs all the time. How about if we give you a blood pressure med? How about if we give you a blood thinner, Coumadin, but you're dehydrated? Now think about that. We give you Coumadin, which is a blood thinner, to the point where you just in fact might hemorrhage in the brain. Look it up yourself. Do your own internet search. It'll tell you. Coumadin, warfarin, heparin, dangerous. Why? You can hemorrhage in the brain. You thin the blood too much. Your PPT, your prothrombin time, just gets too prolonged. Well, don't you think that the rate at which you clot is subject to things other than Coumadin? You bet they are. And one is dehydration. Dehydration from what? The diuretic you're on. Hydrochlorothiazide. So there you go. You've got a cardiovascular concern. You're 70 years old. You've had a mild heart attack. There's no decrease in perfusion. Your left ventricular ejection fraction is up at about 65%, which is just about normal. But the standard of care says you've had a heart attack, however minor. So we're going to put you on BP drugs, and we're going to thin out your blood because we don't want that heart attack to evolve to early stage congestive heart failure. And what are we going to give you? Well, the blood pressure med is going to create stasis because of less perfusion. There's one cardiovascular incident on the way. And then with the blood pressure med, it may include a diuretic, which will dehydrate you, which will clot the blood. And there's a second cardiovascular incident on the way. Look at that. I know this is technical. Sometimes we do a philosophic, theologic show, and sometimes we got to get technical. I wish I had the time today to just stay technical for another hour straight like this. And then you just listen to the show. That's straighttalk.cc. If you're not hearing anything like this on the radio, it's because there isn't anything like this on the radio. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, Straight Talk on Health. Let's keep going. So, in the name of preventing heart disease, blood pressure meds and blood thinners can cause it, which is not to say that in acute scenarios, in life-threatening cases, when somebody's got a clot and they've had a stroke, that you don't give them drugs stronger than Coumadin and keep them on Coumadin for 3-4 months to make sure they don't have another incident. But you must ask the question. If stroke is the third, fourth leading cause of death in the United States, and most of those strokes, at least 60%, are from people who have already had strokes, and they're all on Coumadin, then how effective could Coumadin be? That we say Coumadin might prolong life is a reasonable statement, although it could be challenged. But that we can just leave you on Coumadin and not look at all the other factors that would go into creating a clot, that is a big mistake. And that's the purpose of this show. Okay, chemo drugs. Methotrexate. Blocks folic acid. Folic acid's critical. And if you don't have it, you'll bleed. You'll bleed internally in the intestine. So just understand, if you're on methotrexate, commonly used to help people with the horrid pain of rheumatoid arthritis, or any chemo drug, you're going to have repercussions in the body that demand you, unless you want to progress in your disease process. So we're not even going to challenge or request a justification for being told to do chemo after you've had a cancer or during your cancer process. But we're going to point out that all of us, irregardless of who we are, from the oncologists to the naturopaths, would all agree chemo takes a toll, which is going to mean you must take your liver and take your kidney and put them in paranormal levels of health. Your mindset after chemo is that you want to rebuild, regrow even, a physiology in the liver and in the gallbladder par excellence. Because, well, maybe we can do this. Here's six specific things. I can't get to the kidney, but here's six specific things that will eat up your liver cell. And I just got the 1 minute buzz, and I don't think I can get into it. Oh, great stuff. Okay, I think I'm going to continue this next week. Next week we're going to do drugs part two. And we're going to get into exactly how drugs eat up your liver cells, what to the T they actually do. And as always, I will turn this into something you can understand. Hear this show again. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Call Catalina at 310-320-1132. Sign up for the school, which I'm going to do tomorrow. I still have 5 seats left. God bless you. Have a great week. Dr. Vincent Medici signing off.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part, you can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.